Brokaw Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. Mark Sapelsa normally joins us at this time, but Mark, unavailable this evening. So Ben Bradley, Chief Investigative, or what is your title on that?
I'm not the chief. Investigative reporter is fine, all around jack of all trades.
Oh, I thought, yes. Okay, all right, good.
Ben Bradley of all trades. Bradley, yeah. Place, as we like to call it.
Yes, him. Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. Still finding my way around the old number 9 here.
But you seem to have found the microphone.
I did.
Yeah, that's okay.
I did.
That's hard to do, I've heard.
Like, see what you did. There's a very curious story developing here, and I don't seem to understand exactly what it is. Judy Pollack was just breaking in with it at the top of the hour, that the divorce of Jesse Jackson Jr. and Sandy Jackson has now made its way to a subpoena for Rick Simon, who's a former Chicago police officer, but now a guy in private business running a big company that does not only security work, but it also does janitorial work and stuff like that in Chicago. So a big time business guy and philanthropist here.
Very connected.
And also the former superintendent of the police department, Gary McCarthy. And apparently what they're saying is a former Chicago police officer.
Yes.
As well.
So the Sun-Times was first to report this. Yeah, they're saying that lawyers for Jesse Jackson Jr. in the divorce case have subpoenaed all records relating to phone calls, text messages, messages sent via Facebook or WhatsApp or Snapchat, you know, basically everything you can imagine. They've subpoenaed those records for a pretty lengthy period from Gary McCarthy, the former Chicago police superintendent, and then those two others you mentioned. What's really odd, struck me as odd about this, and we don't certainly have any independent confirmation that this happened, is the timelines of it all. If you think back, you know, Rahm brought Gary McCarthy in with him in 2011. Mm-hmm. You know, within about a year of that, the Jacksons, the scandal was already enveloped Sandy and Jesse Jackson Jr. In fact, they, you know, they pled guilty in February of 2013. She actually resigned her job in the city council a month or so before that. So they wouldn't have had a lot of
overlap. Was she aware that she had a job in the city council? Because she was living in Washington, D.C. at the time. Was she aware of that?
Well, you know, there were a lot of frequent flyer miles obtained. Another interesting aspect of the divorce, isn't it, that Sandy Jackson wants the divorce case heard in Washington, D.C., the former Chicago alderman claiming that her actual residence is in Washington, D.C.
Finally, she's claiming that.
Or her kids go to school there, too.
And did while she was a Chicago alderman.
Yeah. It was a ridiculous. I mean, it was, as Harold Washington once said, Hubert's gone wild. It was what it was. That's what happened in the Jackson household. And I know that a lot of people are critical of Hubert's gone wild with Jesse Jackson Sr. and all that. But you know, there are some members of that family who are incredibly dedicated, diligent professionals in their chosen fields, and solid citizens. And Jesse Jackson Jr., for all his, what's that expression?
Too much that is given, much is expected.
Right. And thank you. I always forget that expression. and Jesse Jackson Jr. received a lot. He grew up in with a lot of access to power and to influence and to money and all those sorts of things. And he started his career, you know, I got to know him a little bit when he was starting out as a politician, and you know, he had a lot of hope, and there was a lot of people thought this guy could be somebody who really does rise to something.
There was a lot of thought he'd be a lot more transcendent than his father ever was.
Yeah.
And what I was always struck by him was he was very aware of that, and he would refer to his father not as dad or father in public settings, but as
the Reverend, you know,
the Reverend, the Reverend, the Reverend. And the Reverend would refer to his son not as, you know, my son, but as the congressman.
Yeah.
So there was always a certain level of professional distance between the two.
Yeah, I was fascinated by their relationship, and I thought that Jesse Jackson Jr. was a real up and comer in not only Illinois politics, but I think also maybe even national politics at one level. And then, but, and it did seem weird. You know, sometimes relationships, I don't know anything about this, but sometimes relationships can divert you.
Start and the therapy clock, yeah.
Professionally. And I always felt like my observation of that was that from the distance that I was, it seemed like that marriage seemed to divert him from that. And I think that she wanted more out of it than perhaps maybe, you know, that based on where she was coming into the relationship, you know, based on the family that she was marrying into. And I think she wanted a piece of the pie, and she became an alderman as a result of it. And then her treatment, I always blamed her more, that her treatment of the people of the city, the taxpayers of the city of Chicago, when she was an alderman, from a very, you know, a big aldermanic post. She was in a big ward.
Yeah.
Right? Down in Hyde Park.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she was, she had the audacity, and not in a good way. This is a bad audacity.
So this is not the audacity of hope.
No, this is the audacity of what I can get away with. And, you know, she basically moved, you know, picked up, moved to Washington and was like, yeah, I'll deal with that later.
Right.
And she, and that was just, the whole thing was just so, to me, it was so obvious. And then she would come back. And again, we go back to this, like Blagojevich or Trump or any of the people that literally will lie to you directly.
Mm-hmm. With a smile.
Right. And tell you something they know is not true directly.
Right.
And I think that it is it's good advice I'm going to give to the incoming president of the United States, that even though he has done that over and over and over again, whether it was the birther movement or any of the other stuff that I'm going to give you the tax returns in 2 weeks, things like that. Those sorts of, you know, lies of omission and lies of you know, obfuscation come back to haunt you, and they add up.
Well, let's look at it from the local perspective. You know, what got Rod Blagojevich in the end? What got Jesse Jackson Jr. in the end? What got Sandy Jackson? It was their own sense of self-entitlement.
Right.
And their feeling that, you know, they got too big for their britches, essentially. You know, Rod Blagojevich could not believe that this guy named Barack Obama had basically passed him in the fast lane. And it was him fuming over that.
And her fuming over it.
And, mm-hmm. Yep, and his wife fuming over it, as caught on FBI recordings.
Right. Right.
Let there never be any in our own homes. You know, that I think led to a lot of the emotion that you heard fueling what were later determined to be illegal conversations.
Yeah. Right. There's a little bit more on the Sun-Times now. Remember the fight over keeping the divorce case here in Illinois referred to acts Sandy Jackson allegedly committed in the state that gave rise to their divorce action. And the Sun-Times is saying that the subpoenas involving McCarthy, former superintendent, and former police officer James Love seek all documents relating to gifts, including cash, check, property, trips, and or vacations taken with Sandy, and any documents, films, videos, or recordings from her or with her, or reflect
God.
The two of you together. So, you know, there's something.
So well, Gary McCarthy's had an interesting week, hasn't he?
Yeah.
And for the record, we don't know what they're looking for. This could just be a huge fishing expedition.
And it could also be trying to jam up other people who have business and other things going on in their lives, and then draw them into a case so that there's pressure on one side to settle, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
And
that's kind of
but this
possible.
Is the kind of stuff that goes on, and it just. Yeah, oh my God! You know, they have been just a. It's funny because again, you know, there was greatness, and by the way, I think that also goes for Barack Obama and the Jackson family. I think not so much the whole Jackson family writ large. I don't think the other kids, because I think that, you know, I don't think there was this kind of thing, but I think that Jesse Jackson Jr. saw, you know, the kid with the big ears who's not from here,
right. Right.
Jump past him as well. Not only did Rob Blagojevich watch a guy leapfrog him, but Jesse Jackson Jr. and Sandy Jackson saw this guy who no one sent.
Right.
No one, you know, who's this guy? Wait a second. Yeah. And, you know, and Barack Obama in his ascendancy never tapped into
kissed
the ring of Jesse Jackson Sr.
To that point, I will never forget the first time I met Barack Obama. It was at Rainbow Push on the South Side when Reverend Jackson has on Saturdays, you know, his service and sermon, and then would always encourage slash demand the presence of politicians. In election season, you'd get more, and other times you'd get less. But, you know, you always had your core group of politicians who, you know, had no problem getting down there and loved being on TV in the press conferences that Jackson, Reverend Jackson, would have afterwards. I mean, it was always kind of an interesting scene because you'd have, you know, Danny Davis and Jesse Jr. and the Reverend, and they're all kind of like, you know, in when Blagojevich would go down there, I remember Jim Ryan, the former attorney general, ran for governor going down there. You know, and they're all kind of like elbowing each other to get in the camera shot. Right. And the very first time I met Barack Obama was on one of those Saturday mornings. And he was not elbowing to get in the camera shot. He was off to the side, leaning against a wall, kind of, you know, with all the photographers and, you know, who were didn't have their cameras pointed at him. And I went over and I introduced myself. He was, you know, a state senator at the time. And I said, how come you're not getting in on the show? And he said, I have to be here, but I don't have to like it.
Hmm.
And I thought that was always very telling about Barack Obama's personality and how he viewed the Chicago African-American political class.
Yeah. Which is why he ended up with Jeremiah Wright as opposed to Jesse Jackson. In a weird, you know, because there was a there's in the power brokering world of African American churches in Chicago.
I thought Jeremiah Wright was Reverend Jackson's pastor for a while. Am I remembering that wrong?
Yeah, but it was not a consistent relationship. There were others that were more, you know, sort of in a line. There's a hierarchy that goes on there, right? And there's a. It's very. I'm fascinated by this. Well, we'll see what happens here. This is a big Chicago story developing. All right. Thank you very much, Ben.
Thank you, Ben.
Good to be with you.
You did a nice job today.
Thank you. Please tell Mr. Sapelsa that I did okay because I know he was worried.
I won't do that.
He'll wonder.
Yeah, he was so worried.
Card.
Yeah, let Ben do it.